This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all. From personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome back to the Mom in Mind podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kat. On this episode, I'm talking with Dr. Kylie Hanisch, and I'm very excited to bring this episode to you. She is going to be talking about her experience of being diagnosed later in life after kids with autism and ADHD. And this is a conversation that has needed to happen on this podcast for a while, but also needs to happen in general. And I'm also looking forward to having a couple more guests on here in the near future who are going to talk about their experience as well. But Kylie reached out to me knowing that this was a very important topic to address, and I'm so grateful that she did. I think you'll learn a lot from this episode and our conversation. Kylie's going to talk about how that diagnosis impacted her and what non-stereotypical autism looks like and how getting a diagnosis can be a privilege, why self-diagnosis is valid. And we're going to go over some information about autism in women and in motherhood, and also the role of hormones that play out in autism and ADHD. Dr. Kylie Hanisch is a neurodivergent occupational therapist specializing in mental health during the perinatal period, which includes pregnancy, postpartum, and perinatal loss. She is the founder of Return to Zero Hope, a nonprofit organization that provides inclusive and compassionate education and support for bereaved families after pregnancy and infant loss. In addition, they also provide training and support to health providers in order to foster more confidence when working with these families. As I said, she was recently diagnosed as autistic ADHD, which has led her down the path of learning more about autism in adults, autism and grief, and autistic mothers. She has been mentoring her occupational therapy research group as they further their exploring the sensory experiences of autistic mothers and how that relates to engagement in everyday life. I'm very excited for you to hear this conversation. So let's talk with Kylie. Welcome, Kylie. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on the show again.
Yeah, I'm really grateful and happy to be talking to you about this topic. It's come up a lot for me recently, people reaching out about stuff related to autism diagnosis later in life and impacting motherhood. So I'm really happy to start this conversation with you because we haven't done this on the podcast yet and it's super important. So thanks for sharing with us today. Wouldn't mind just start with your story wherever you'd like to, and we'll kind of set up the frame for all the other great stuff you're going to talk about.
Yeah. So my story related to my autism and ADHD diagnosis started about maybe like out of the fall of 2022. So maybe a year and a few months ago. And my son had received an ADHD diagnosis along with some learning disabilities about a year prior. But at that point, I didn't really know much about it. I'm an OT. I should know. I don't. And I was like, what the heck? He doesn't, that doesn't really fit him. And But it made sense once I started learning about it. And so then, but I didn't think of any of it for me. So then my sister got a diagnosis maybe a year later, and she started sending me things about ADHD in women and just how it looks different. There's different types. And so I started reading that. And one thing that really stuck out to me was the inability to filter out auditory stimuli. And I have always had a lot of auditory sensitivities, in addition to other sensory sensitivities. And so that resonated with me. And so I decided, and don't do this because I shouldn't have done this, but I started taking my son's medication, like the starter dose that we had from him before. And it changed my life. Like it made me feel like I put on a helmet over my head and I could go out into the world and not be like inundated with all this stimuli. And I was like, oh my goodness. And then my psychiatrist was she's like, well, you need an official assessment. I mean, I'll give this because I'm like, no, you have to prescribe it. Like, and she's, and so then I was so busy, I just couldn't do it. And so like the next time I met with her, I was like, I went to Target at 6 o'clock at night and it didn't faze me, because one of my coping strategies is I go to stores when they open because I can't deal with the people, like the energy from the people, the noise, all of that. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that I could go to Target at 6 o'clock at night was like unheard of.
Right.
So
she That's was go like, time at Target. Like every
She's yeah. like, oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So I then, about a month after I started taking the stimulant medication, I heard a podcast by Zara Astra, and she had spoken at the Stanford Neurodiversity Conference about like the fall of 2022, I think, talking about people who are highly sensitive, could they be level one autism? And so I've, for the past like 5 to 7 years, maybe really identified with the highly sensitive person label mm-hmm. to help explain me and who I am. And I listened to this podcast and I was like, oh my goodness, this explains everything about me. Like all these quirky things that I just thought I was different and weird or whatever. But like when you put language to certain things, it was like a light bulb went off. So I went an OT professor, one of my hats that I wear, and one of my students in my class was very openly autistic and ADHD. And she said to me, she's like, Dr. Hannes, if you put the Asperger qualities next to the HSP qualities, they're really the same. And so I just went on this deep dive of like autism in women. And it was like life-changing for me. I really like, at that point, I was like, this resonates. This explains me. It was like this missing puzzle piece, like the lens of seeing my whole life and like why I am the way I am.
Right.
I did pursue a formal diagnosis. I mean, I needed it. The psychiatrist wanted it for the ADHD. And, you know, and I went through the process and I already self-diagnosed myself correctly autism and ADHD. And nothing really came out of the diagnosis process. It was like, I wanted the validation because I'm like, but that didn't, what it didn't do anything. But, and I've just been on this deep dive. And then I like came across another article or an article by a woman named Dr. Talser in the UK, who did a qualitative study about the sensory experiences of autistic mothers. She interviewed 7 mothers and explained like all the challenges that come while you're autistic being a parent and some of the strategies that they use. And that also for me was like another huge shift because it parenting, and I talk about this pretty openly, parenting has been really, 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 I don't even want to say hard. It's been debilitating for me. Like I feel like the moment I became a parent, it broke me.
Yeah.
And that also followed my stillbirth. So my first child was stillborn. And then, so it's just like all this, what was probably happening after my daughter was born, after my son who was stillborn, it was like, I probably had postpartum PTSD.
You're right.
And I also had sensory overload. Like the idea of like, and we can get into this later, but so it's just like, so that's kind of been where I am. And I'm just like diving in and figuring out like, okay, it was like grieving over the fact how many different providers I've been to.
Right.
And nobody screens for this.
Correct.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, and the amount of suffering and the amount of feeling so weird or different. And then also this like ableist society that we live in, that we should be able to right. do certain things. And then it's like, why can I not function that way? Right. Like something's like, I live in a state, I feel like, I mean, a constant state of overwhelm, but it's yeah. also like my battery, like if I was like a cell phone, my battery's right. like always on low power mode.
Yeah.
Chronic
yeah.
fatigue, like uh-huh. all this stuff. And so I've just like that, there's so much more, but that's kind of the course. Story of like how I learned.
It sounds like, I mean, so relieving, which it doesn't, that word doesn't feel like enough to describe what you're saying. Life-changing for sure. I mean, to be able to go from, and this is, I think, true for a lot of things, to be able to go from, I don't know what's wrong, but I know something's wrong, to like, okay, I figured it out and it's a thing. And I have options, because it just ends up feeling so, when you don't know, if I think feels lonely and you don't know how to explain yourself to others. And I mean, it impacts relationship, all of that stuff. So just being able to say, this is what it is. And when you have a feeling come up, you can say, oh, it's because of this, not because I'm like some deeply flawed human.
Yeah. Well, it gave me permission to start, like once I understood, like I needed certain things mm-hmm. for my nervous system, permission mm-hmm. to do the thing, to start changing my life a little bit, or saying no to things because I know why I have to say no. You know, yeah. it's like energy management and like the prevention and mm-hmm. so stuff like that. There, I would say there's a grief, but also freedom.
Yeah.
But both.
Yeah. It's hugely impactful. And, you know, based on what you said, I think part of the challenge, what I've heard with ADHD anyways, and probably is the same with autism, is that if it's not showing up very like super clearly in childhood and kind of tagged or noticed or diagnosed or supported at that point, people can go on for years and years and years not having an understanding of why they function the way they do or feel the way that they do. So like getting a diagnosis later in life, I imagine providers aren't really looking for it because it's this like, quote unquote, diagnosis of in childhood. Is that what
well,
you
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, so women and people who are not white boys. So anyone who's not a white boy is less likely to be diagnosed.
Ugh.
And so right now they're saying the current male to female ratio of autism is 4 to 1, but actually it's more 3 to 4. So there's That's more women different.
Yeah.
And that 80% of girls are undiagnosed by the age of 18. So wow. most people do not know. And so number That's... one, less likely to be diagnosed if there's not a co-occurring intellectual disability. There's okay. diagnosis is often based on behavior markers. So mm-hmm. which are created from pre-existing conceptions of what autism looks like.
Right.
Right. And right. so we base it on the external behaviors. But the thing is that women and other people, right, we mask. So we hide what's mm-hmm. going on. And we also have more internal symptoms that we can't see.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have that. We kind of like hold it in. We have less of the social, emotional communication difficulties than males.
Mm-hmm.
However, women still have a hard time like making and sustaining relationships. But again, this is like a lot of internal stuff.
Right.
And then, so it's like, if you're a person who's not severely impacted in an external behavior way, mm-hmm. then you're not going to be diagnosed.
Wow.
But then the other thing is like we see, right, there's a lot of co-occurring health conditions with neurodivergence. There's more PTSD, depression, anxiety, suicide. Women are seen as hypochondriacs. Okay, so like me, I've had chronic fatigue for how many years?
Right.
And the gaslighting. And I'm like, I know, like when my son was born, he's 11 now. I'm like, I'm just so exhausted. Like, oh, yeah. you don't seem depressed. That's what they told me.
Okay.
Or like, oh, being a mom is just really tiring. But I've gotten to the point where I'm like,
ugh.
Cannot get out of bed, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. You were saying something, sorry.
No, I appreciate that. I'm really interested in the co-occurring. I assume there's quite a list of the potential co-occurring conditions, but that you were speaking to the gaslighting and, you know, I mean, for any woman who is trying to figure out any diagnosis, this happens, the kind of gaslighting specifically during motherhood. Of course you're tired, you're a mom, or of course you're tired, you have 2, 3, 4, 5 kids, whatever it is. And it's just, I mean, you see this in perinatal mental health across the board, but, and really anything for women, it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. So like you and other people who are talking about this is so important, because if providers either don't have the training to see it or are assuming that symptoms are associated with something else, then it kind of is on you to figure a lot of stuff out. And then have to try and talk to providers about what you think is going on and go through the whole process of convincing someone or whatever it is. It's exhausting.
There's a group in Vermont called All Brains Belong, and they have this project going called All the Things. And it's basically how like they're all these co-occurring health conditions are actually part of the neurodivergence. Mm-hmm. And they have like a letter for if you're a patient to bring to your doctor.
Oh, cool.
And then they also have a clinician guide broken up into the different systems of like, I can't remember, but like gut, hypermobility, like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is a huge co-occurring. POTS is another huge co-occurring health syndrome, chronic fatigue, gut stuff, sleep, like all these different things. And so that is helpful. And at the same time, I personally have like shared that with a provider and they're like, oh, I saw you sent that. I haven't looked through it, you know, but so they're not, and I understand people are busy, but you have to do so much education and on your own to advocate for yourself.
This podcast is sponsored by Paired. One of the things I hear weekly is how clients feel distant or not as connected to their partners, and also how they'd like to feel heard and seen by their partners. So for all you partners out there, it might be time to try Paired. It's an app that helps couples connect in a meaningful way, especially for couples who either feel disconnected, don't have time to sit down together, or who are just wanting to keep the connection going. This app is great. My husband and I are on it, and one of the things I love are the games where I answer a set of fun or interesting questions, and then he does the same, and we see where our answers line up or are different. It's a really cool way of learning something new about him, even though we've been together over 20 years. And there are a bunch of other great questions geared towards connection and understanding and intimacy that, when you share your answers, can help you and your partner understand each other better. Share the love this Mother's Day by going to paired.com/mind to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. That's paired.com/mind to sign up today. Let's give the gift of connection this Mother's Day. A happier relationship starts here.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Absolutely. I'll include that website. You said all the things.
Yeah.
.com or .org?
I'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, especially for people who are just hearing this and wondering for themselves, that sounds like a good place to go.
And then my other favorite resource, and I can share this with you too, is Neurodivergent Insights. So I was on, they have a podcast called Divergent Conversations. I was on a podcast of theirs talking about autism and grief. And then she herself is a psychologist, autistic ADHDer, and she is passionate about training other therapists, but she just does a lot of education, a lot of great information. I mean, for everybody too.
Sure.
It's guides, worksheets, stuff like that.
So. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I'll include that as well. Yeah. You were mentioning a bunch of co-occurring conditions. And before we started talking today, you had also talked about the role of hormones. And I'd love to know what you have looked into and found out.
Yeah. So one of my recent deep dives is like the impact of hormone fluctuations on autism and ADHD. And so there's most of the research out there is with ADHD. So the idea that estrogen is a powerful hormone that controls your neurotransmitters of dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin, which are big players in ADHD and depression. You know, so when estrogen drops drastically, which is like before your like in the second half of your cycle, after you give birth, there's like a huge drop in hormones. And then in perimenopause, your estrogen is dropping. And so what they're seeing is exacerbated symptoms of ADHD during these times. So there's an increased risk for PMDD, which is like really bad PMS for people who don't know that, perimenopause, and then higher risk of postpartum depression, anxiety, OCD. And so what's happening is like, the people may have these experiences like, oh, like I have PMDD, and but there's not the link to the ADHD piece. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening is like, even if you're taking a stimulant and your estrogen is dropping a lot, that the stimulant's not enough to control those symptoms. And so, I mean, I know for myself what is working in terms of a treatment. You know, so like I'm in perimenopause. So like I'm on hormone replacement therapy. As I told you before, I increased my SSRI and I'm on a stimulant, and that has helped a lot with my sensory sensitivities. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that when I like decreased my estrogen, my depression got worse. And so I'm like, at least my psychiatrist knew, it's like, okay, we need to increase the SSRI. But it's a lot of playing around. But I think most people don't, like even if they're a reproductive psychiatrist, they're not necessarily trained in the neurodivergence piece. And so that's like, and it's new though. It's not like, oh, you didn't learn it at all. It's just all really new.
Right. So yeah, I mean, it would be really challenging then to find this like unicorn of a provider who can like see all. And a lot of people are open to learning and figuring it out. And a lot of doctors have to do that, like creative problem solving stuff, which is great. But even more important than to kind of being take note of your own symptoms or your own experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, well, so like, I think if like you have this awareness and then tracking, like tracking what's like what symptoms are getting worse at what times the month and what, when does it feel better? And there has to be like, some on your end, educating yourself and then going in and saying like, I'm noticing this, what can we do about it? And I have, and I can share with you, like one page on my website, I have links to some webinars and articles about this hormonal piece too.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so there's not much research, it sounds like.
There's not, no. Oh, okay. And what I've learned is mostly through, have you heard of Attitude Magazine online? So yeah. Like they're putting out some information, like if they have a few researchers who have done webinars on this topic and, but there's not a lot out there.
Right. So for, I mean, how did you find out? You mentioned like level one autism and different types of ADHD. How did you figure out those things? Like, is there, I'm sure it's a lot of places you went to, but that's a lot to kind of research.
Well, the level one autism, that has to do with like what levels of support you need in terms of like, I don't need a lot of extra supports in terms of, but, and that was with, so like those two things came with my diagnosis when I did my assessment.
I see.
Like, I think I had like inattentive ADHD, but you can read about it. I mean, I would assume Neurodivergent Insights probably has some of that. And they have, she has like recommendations for screeners that you can do on yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's something. I mean,
yeah.
And I think there's also like, there's with ADHD, there's like inattentive type, hyperactivity, and then there's a combination.
So in terms of getting a diagnosis, I know that having a like a full psych eval or having any type of evaluation that's in depth takes time and takes resources, and it's not something that everybody has access to. So like these kind of self-evaluation tools are even more important for that. Yeah. Can you speak to any of that that you've seen, that you've come across? Yeah.
I mean, I believe, and I think other people believe this too, it's not just my personal opinion, is that a self-diagnosis is sometimes more accurate than even a formal diagnosis, because a lot of people doing the assessments do not know what autism looks like in women or people who are not white boys, like if it's not presenting in the external stereotypical ways. Mm-hmm. So it's in addition to the things you just said, it's also, there's not people who are trained in non-stereotypical presentation of autism. Mm-hmm. So that's another barrier. So I believe that self-diagnosis is really valid if you have a child who is neurodivergent with like ADHD or autism, 80% genetic chance, like it's, there's 80% chance that you will have it too, because it's genetic. And so what I think what we see a lot with parents is like their kid will receive a diagnosis mm-hmm. and then they'll start recognizing, oh, these are traits that I have too.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, but I think there's also the other thing we need to talk about is stigma. There's such a stigma, right? Yeah, it's like, even when I tell people like, I'm autistic, because I think it's so exciting because it explains everything. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, well, you make eye contact or you're really successful or smart or whatever, like things like that. And like, they think that autism is nonverbal and they can't make eye contact. Those are like what people think. Right. And that is true for some people, but there's so many of us that that's not the case.
Right.
And so also like, I don't share, I overshared with people my like I disclosed my diagnosis. And now if I don't want their opinion, like I just know that they're going to probably be like, what? So I think like, so if you're curious, you know, it's like starting there, you know, you can do those screeners, just start reading and see if like the certain aspects resonate with you. And then also understanding that like, you don't have to, there's like different categories within the autism traits. Different categories within autism traits. And so you don't have to be, have like sensitivities or issues in all of those. Like, it doesn't mean all or nothing. It's like these areas, yes, these areas, no. And I think it's just learning about yourself.
Right. Everybody looks different. They have.
And like finding language for me is really important to explain what I'm experiencing or the way I approach things, things like that.
Yeah. So going back to the autism diagnosis and motherhood, you were speaking a little bit about what you noticed, I guess, after the fact that you were able to link that these were the challenges that you had connected to that. What else are you seeing either for yourself or other people that you talk with?
Yeah. I mean, so we know that autistic people in general have sensory sensitivities. And we know that parenthood is a time where sensory demands are increased anyways.
Right, for sure.
And so if we already are very sensitive and we have more of that, like we're seeing like a lot of challenges come up, right? So like in terms of how does this impact our daily lives? Well, it impacts our sleep. It impacts our ability. And so I guess with sleep, you know, so, and this is also with people with postpartum mood and anxiety disorders, but like, right, it's like, you can't fall asleep. You can't go to sleep once your baby has fallen back asleep. Like that was me. I was just awake for hours. Self-care piece. So with this one, it's before we had children, we often have strategies to help regulate our nervous system. We don't know that that's what we're doing. But when the child is born, you have no time, right? And so you lose access to being able to do those things that help you regulate. And you also didn't know that you were doing those things to help you regulate. And so you're like, oh my gosh, like I'm like overwhelmed. I'm on edge. I'm irritable, all this stuff. And it's because a lot of times, like spending time alone is a huge way to self-regulate. I know for me it is. And so when you have a child, it's 24/7 and you don't get any time alone. And so there's no way for you to recover almost from that. An inability to engage in like physical movement or your areas of interest, you know, so we have a lot of special interests, like can't do it. It's like, you can't do the things that you did before to help you regulate your nervous system.
Right.
And then we talked about the increase of risk of postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. That's an issue. People lack someone else to watch their child, right? In order to get that time to themselves. And then also there's a fear of judgment from other people.
Yeah.
And like thinking like, I'm a bad mom. If I need help, what's wrong with me? There also could be like, right, there's a lot of co-regulation that has to go on between parent and child. But if the parent can't access the self-regulating strategies, then they're not going to be, they're like overstimulating. They can't co-regulate with their baby. And there also may be like a different sensory needs between parent and child too.
Right. Sure.
You know, and so like, that's a thing. And then also like what we see is like the increased pressure to socialize with activities that have to do with your child. And so doing that, there's exhaustion, overwhelm. But if you opt not to do it, there's tremendous guilt because you're like, I'm not doing this. I should be doing this, but that is exhausting, things like that.
I know you did a research project on this. I assume that like you found this out from the responses.
Yeah.
From the people.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Did you get a lot of interest in this?
We did, surprisingly. So we did a survey and we got 175 people to respond within 4 weeks, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And interestingly, out of those 175, only 10 of them had a diagnosis pre-child.
Okay.
So most all are diagnosed after having children. So which makes it challenging when you are pregnant and you're giving birth, when you don't know you're autistic because of all of like changes in your body and then all the medical appointments and the experience in the hospital, all that. So there's all that.
Right.
And then there's a lot of trauma in the birth experience because of that. And just, yeah. And so, I mean, we found, these are like the highlights of what we found in that, but
yeah,
people can read more on my website that we'll share the link to that as well. But it's fascinating, you know?
Right. Also quite sad. I mean, just thinking out of 175, only 10 already had a diagnosis. It's 165 people who have gone a lot of their life without knowing what's going on. It's a huge number. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you were saying that a lot of like physicians aren't looking for this, but also I can say a lot of therapists aren't trained in this as well. Certainly I wasn't. And, you know, it's got me thinking about how much more training we should be getting outside of, you know, grad school and just being able to notice or screen or ask questions about this so that we can support our clients better.
Well, and the other thing, I'm working with Dr. Megan Anna Neff from Neurodivergent Insights, you know, with to create something that even the people who are doing the assessments on the children or who are OTs working with children or the pediatricians, when you diagnose a kid, you should also give the parent some information like, oh, you might want to look into yourself.
Sure.
No one has said that to me or anybody. And so that's another thing. It's like when a child is neurodivergent, you should give the parents some information about like, well, what about yourself? What are like 10 signs that you might be neurodivergent and just resources for them? Because again, I feel like even with a diagnosis with my son, it was very much like, here you go. Okay. And then again, you have to go research, advocate, all that, which is challenging.
It sure is. So I've heard people, maybe going back to the stigma a little bit, like, oh, you know, everybody has a diagnosis of ADHD and they're just like handing this out and so on and so forth. But I think anchoring in what you've said about like 80% of people have not been diagnosed since, you know, a lot of, well, I guess anyone who's not a white boy, it's not like all of the sudden it's the diagnosis of the day and people are just handing it out. It's that their providers were not informed. People weren't looking for it. People have been suffering. And I think it's an important, like, just to call it out that I've heard it. I'm sure you've heard it too. Oh yeah. Everybody has ADHD now.
Yeah.
It's just another way of, I guess, minimizing somebody's experience. And like, okay, so what if everybody has ADHD now? Great. They have a diagnosis. They have support or they know what's going on or it's just a kind of a yucky thing that is out there. It's another way of making it hard for people to get the help they need. If you feel shame after somebody says that, then you're less likely to be open about it or seek support.
Because then you think to yourself, well, maybe everyone's like, oh, like everyone's brain's different. Everybody's brain's different, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, okay. But does that mean, you know, it does make you think about, well, maybe I don't need to seek those accommodations, or maybe this is a silly road to go down and find out about. And there's so many helpful things that are out there. I mean, medication is helpful, but it's not the only thing. There's so many other things you know, just like as an OT, it's like we can put all these tips and strategies and tools to help someone feel supported and structured. So there's help out there.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Koh, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking it. I'm so incredibly grateful for you starting this conversation with me here on this podcast. And I hope to have many more conversations about it. It's so important. And for people who are thinking that this might be something that they resonate with or don't know where to go or don't know what to do, what kinds of things would you suggest?
Because I started sharing this so much with people, I had a Google folder and then I just put it on my website. So I have a page on my website that's under the neurodiversity tab. So it's drkyliehanisch.com/neurodiversity that has kind of a summary of what we talked about today. Mm-hmm. And then it has links to my favorite resources because there's so many resources out there in terms of people on Instagram or TikTok or whatever. So there's a lot of information out there, but I just, to not overwhelm people, I culled it down. Like my favorite go-to is Neurodivergent Insights. That's kind of where I've resonated. And she has a community that you can join as well, whether you're a person who is neurodivergent or you're a therapist who wants to help support neurodivergent clients. There's just a lot of education. Right. So that's been great. She does have screeners for autism and ADHD. I mean, they're not her screeners. It's just like a list of recommended screeners.
Oh, got it.
That's a way to start. And I think, yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I would go to the website that has a lot of links. My favorite book, it's a new book by Devin Price. It's called Unmasking Autism. Mm-hmm. And it's really just looking at neurodiversity in so many new and different ways. So I really enjoyed that. He's also spoken on a few podcasts, if that works better for you. So my three favorite podcasts, Divergent Conversations that I mentioned, Uniquely Human podcast is good. So that's a little bit more directed towards children, but not only. Mm-hmm. And Two Sides of the Spectrum is with an OT. So again, a little bit more directed towards children, but not only, because Devin Price was on both of those podcasts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think what's changing with neurodivergence in general is, you know, is the idea that before we approach it very much from a medical model, deficits based, and that someone needs to be fixed or changed and using ABA. But now it is people in the autism community do not want that, right? They don't, ABA is like training a dog. And it's, even though it's what insurance will pay for, it is not what is the best for people with autism. Mm-hmm. So rather looking at it like a strengths-based approach, looking at how do we change the environment? How do we change the task? Mm-hmm. How do we understand like what is that person's sensory needs? What's going on? I mean, it's more complicated than that, but
sure.
And then, yeah, as I said, like I have links to information about neurodivergence and hormones, mm-hmm. autism and parenting, co-occurring health conditions. So all of that is on this one page.
That's awesome. It's just amazing that you've put all of that together for people. I mean, I know it just changes your life when you know what's going on. There's no way around that. Yeah. It just helps so much. And I know a lot of people have that feeling like that something's feeling different. And I think maybe even the way social media is set up makes it even worse in a lot of ways, because you have whatever type of people sort of make it to the like the top of who's in your feed have a certain skill set. And if you are home alone or whatever, looking online and comparing yourself to somebody that might be just very different than you, you know, and this happens across the board too, with just perinatal mood and anxiety disorders too. It can be isolating. You can feel alone, but I mean, this is opening a door. What you're talking about is opening a door for a lot of people to find answers. And I really appreciate you coming on to talk about this.
Thank you. Yeah. I think there's a need for a group like autistic mother, like kind of social support group online that I Absolutely. Think could be helpful, because again, the like, I don't fit in anywhere. And I mean, it's similar. There is a lot of similarities, I will say, between being a bereaved parent and being autistic. I don't know why, but there just are, in terms of the like, I feel different. The people I connect with most are like other bereaved parents, you know, but I can say the same with people who are autistic. It's like you get each other.
Yeah. Right.
And then interestingly enough, like with Return to Zero, I didn't know this before, but like the way that I've created Return to Zero, the resources, the way we do support groups is very much neurodivergent affirming because that's what I needed. So in terms of like needing to know, okay, well, what is going to happen? Can you explain things to me? And doing it in a very like easy list format and just things like that. But I didn't know that's what it was. It is, you know, or like in the group, because I don't like social groups of any kind, but, you know, making things really structured and trying to create safety and choice and things like that. So interesting.
That's amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing that with us. And I really hope that folks out there who are listening feel seen and heard and are able to get the resources for themselves.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me share my story and sharing just all about this. Like, I'm obviously excited about it. So
I love it. Yeah, too.
Yeah. So it's great. And I just hope there'll be more conversations about this so we can raise awareness and get people to learn about themselves and receive diagnosis earlier in life.
Absolutely. 100%. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For more information, go to drkyliehanisch.com/neurodiversity. For a lot of the links that she talked with us about on this episode, you can find those resources there. And you can also find her on social media at Kylie Hanisch. I'm very grateful to Kylie for bringing this conversation to the podcast and really exploring with us the stuff that we should know. It's such an important conversation, and I hope it helps to further people's awareness and information on autism and ADHD, specifically as it relates to perinatal mental health. For those of you who've been listening to the podcast for a while, please go check and make sure you're getting all of the episodes downloaded directly to you. There were some changes in how podcasts were categorized and downloaded, and it may have affected how you are receiving your downloads or if you're getting them at all. So go to your podcast app and make sure that you are subscribed and you're getting all of these episodes downloaded to you. For those of you who are new to the podcast, please go do subscribe to the podcast. It's free and you can get these episodes directly to you. You can listen to them whenever you want. And there's such a huge catalog of episodes to look through and see what works for you. But honestly, the more subscribers that I have on this podcast and the more people who are regularly getting their downloads, the better it is for the podcast and more people get to see it in their feeds. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Your support means the world and it helps keep the podcast going. Thanks so much for being here. Until next time. Please find the Mom and Mind podcast on momandmind.com or wellmindperinatal.com, where you can also find access to my free online mini course that is specifically designed for people experiencing anxiety in the postpartum period. Or you can learn more about the 3.5-hour self-paced course that I created just for managing postpartum stress. You can also connect with us on social media at Mom and Mind on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for tuning in and learning more about perinatal mental health.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.